we'll pause here and we'll go back up to Andy. KI4LZI, please call KO4HKX.
4LZI, Larry was talking about the headphones. That book that Larry knows about, and I told some of y'all about timing, explains it to a big degree. Prior to the vacuum tubes, which was needed to amplify the audio in order to drive a speaker, the only way you could listen to anything like that was by headphones. Actually, headphones was actually before the speaker was, because until a vacuum tube came in to being to amplify audio, there wasn't no way to drive a speaker to hear a speaker. You had to use headphones to actually to hear, whether it was a crystal radio or back in the spark gap days. I remember seeing on some of that what they would have when they was listening to for the spark that was making the CW there. They had to have headphones on in order to decipher it. So if you go way back to the beginning, the headphones was there actually in the beginning. Then when the vacuum tubes came out to give some form of way of amplification, then they was able to drive a speaker.
I could see that, but I never thought about it that way, Andy. So I appreciate you bringing that to the net, and it's pretty neat information.
And I've told y'all about his really taught me a lot of things from back in those days. And prior to the vacuum tube, headphones was the only way to hear it because there wasn't enough audio power to drive a speaker prior to that. Go ahead and back to you. If Larry wants to, we can talk after that if we want to. KI4LZI, I heard y'all talking there about the headphones, and I just got to thinking about what that book said prior to the vacuum tube.
For that information, Andy, like I said, I would have never thought about it, but now that you say it, all the telegraph operators, you always see them wearing headphones or holding a speaker, you know, one up to their ear. So, yeah, I guess that would be the way it is, and you just never process it that way.
That back before I got a hold of that book and read that book from one end to the other, I wouldn't have known it either, but it pretty well lays it down how it was in the early days pretty well. And they talk about the regenerative receivers, the spark gap, and about how the vacuum tube allowed you to have amplification to drive a speaker and such as that. And, you know, you learn quite a bit out of that. KI4LZI, back to you.
And again, thank you for coming by with that steel trap you got. You never cease to amaze me with the knowledge you retain about things, and especially the repeaters and what's going on with them and their location, tones, without having to look it up. Just simply amazing, and I do appreciate you coming by and always offering to help out with that. So I thank you for that, sir.
Talk about it after that there, unless he wants to retire early, but he brought that up, and I remember that reading it in the book, but go ahead with your nap for now. KI4LZI.
Andy, so with that, have I missed anyone for comments or check-ins? Please call KO4HKX. None being heard. I will send my net report, and I will return shortly. KO4HKX, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. With our thanks for check-ins, we will now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 7-3, and good night to all.
KBQ, KI4LZI.
4LZI. Hello there, Andy.
That book about the mention of the headphones before the advent of the vacuum tube. Headphones was used all the time back then with a crystal radio receiver or anything else, since there wasn't no way to amplify things prior to that.
Randy, you have a good point there, except I grew up really sheltered, and I've said it before, I grew up pretty ignorant. I didn't know about headphones. I would learn that they've been around a long time, but that doesn't mean that I had been exposed to them, no. maybe, you know, remember the little transistor radios that you carry in your shirt pocket, and they'd have this little earphone? Now that I was acquainted with. But that's one ear at a time, and it's mono, of course. The whole idea, if I can take you there, the whole idea of walking into a store that I'd never been in before and seeing all these stands that were human heads and these headphones that were on and an invitation, obvious people were trying, you know, so I was watching what people were doing. And they were putting them on their heads. I didn't know what would happen after that, but I just says, okay, that's fine. I will check this out. And so I put them on my heads, and from that moment, hearing a stereo image in your brain, that's something I had never known. Earphones with a little transistor radio, yeah, my brother had one of those. I never owned one up until that point, but he had one, and I checked it out. But stereo headphones are different, and these were very high quality. As I recall, these things were over $400 in the early 80s. Real high-end stuff. But that's all this store sold. It was a music center, a specialty store, yeah. I didn't feel like I belonged in there. There were very sophisticated people who had really good ears, as they say, and were very discriminating and didn't mind spending a lot of money on the equipment that would please them. I was out of place, and I knew it. I've come along in the ensuing years, you know, in the last 40, 45 years, I've come along, and I have several pairs of headsets myself, and I enjoy listening to music that way. But I do recall the book and hearing and seeing people before there were loudspeakers for a whole room. Early radios were for an individual, and the way you listened to them was with headphones. I remember that. KK4 JVQ.
Well, see, you had no choice then, because that was just prior to the vacuum tube, and there wasn't no way to amplify it. I remember reading in the book that when they was talking about certain things, this is, well, back in the early days of broadcasting, of course, probably the early 20s, that they were talking about where one church would have a pastor that was preaching at two or three different churches. And they was using radio to do that, but how well it worked depended on, in most cases, by then the vacuum tube was starting to come into being. But prior to that, everything that you would hear, whether it was on a crystal radio that would receive the AM spectrum, or even like with the spark gap, some of the people who were sending codes, almost always they had a headphone on of some kind, because they just, at that time, there was no way to amplify it, none at all. Actually, whenever the vacuum tube started being used very widely, is when they got away from using so much of the headphones and earphones business when the vacuum tube was being used quite a bit. And today, we mainly, when we use it, just for ourselves or get the other surrounding noise from coming in.
stirred up a new memory. I guess I can say that, new memory. An old memory of the first crystal radio set that I built. I read about it in, I think it was Popular Science magazine, and you could send away for the parts and the instructions. I was impressed because one of the parts was something that you would provide. It wouldn't be being shipped because of, you know, the package it would take to ship it. These parts came in a little, you know, package you could hold in your hand. But one of the parts necessary was a Quaker Oats pasteboard. Quaker Oats would come in it, you know, and my mama used those. So next time she emptied one of those, I said, "Mama, I want that. I'm going to make a radio." She could not believe me that I was going to make a radio out of a Quaker Oats can. Well, the parts that came were a little earphone thing, just starting at your head, a little earphone thing and a wire that went down to a little clip. So you built this on a wooden board, and these little clips would be all the connections that you would make to different things. And there weren't many parts. There was a little, I think it was germanium diode, which was the detector. That's the proper name for what it did. It detected the signals, and it didn't amplify anything, this little radio. And you had a little slider. Well, you had to wind a coil around the Quaker Oats can or box. It was a circular box, if you remember those. So you wound this, and it was a big coil, and you would have a sort of a slider that would go along this coil and change the frequency that you'd be listening to or listening for. And I picked up several stations, AM stations. There were a few more back then than there are today. Did you ever make a crystal radio? KK4 JBQ.
I did, but it wasn't as primitive as that one. In my time, it was Radio Shack. I took and got a thing from Radio Shack and put it together, but it wasn't nearly as primitive as the one you're talking about. But that book there, we all both know about, I've read and about some of the details about that. For back at that time, you know, some of those parts was easy to come by for doing such stuff as that back then. And everything that I've seen in regards to something like that, where you're going to a crystal red or try to be hearing it, due to the fact that its power is limited, and always you had to have a earphone or a set of headphones, one in order to hear it. And I don't know where they got this idea. I don't know, but in one of those articles about that, they talked about that if you knew somebody that worked at the telephone company, maybe you could get some from them, like everybody would be working there. But it kind of caught me off guard that they'd make that comment, though.
Yeah. I think this, along with what they would call postage and handling, back in those days, I think this was, you know, it was less than $10 for all the parts. But that was hard to come by. I mean, I was a kid, and we talked to parents. My brother and I talked to parents into an allowance. We just wanted to spend money. We didn't have any money, and so the argument was that we would learn about money and how to take care of it and how to spend it. And my parents bought that. So we got an allowance of a quarter a week. And we spend that quarter on anything. So I'd wind up either spending that money on The several things that I can remember that were important to me at the time were bubblegum or comic books. I wish I'd saved some of those comic books. Or plastic models of cars and ships and planes and, you know, they made all kinds of models. I did put together several of those. And I had saved enough, a quarter at a time, to afford this radio set. And I was determined. I can't remember how much it was, but it couldn't have been a whole lot. The shipping and handling was probably less than $10. So all the parts came in, and my mama helped me with the winding of the... She held the box as I wound the wire around to make a coil, you know. And we put it on a piece of board that my dad had. Screws and things came with it and all. So it was quite a project for a young kid at that time. And I was pleased with the results. There were no batteries. There was no volume control. And you're just picking the stations right out of the air. It fascinated me. It was a good thing for a young kid to do. KK4, JBQ.
Well, see, one thing I learned, of course, where I live, I'm not surprised about it. I didn't hear a thing up here where I'm at right now on that. I didn't hear one thing, but there again, I'm not really surprised that I didn't. Because there wasn't any of those type of stations. The nearest one would probably been out of Pickens and with no more amplification than that, you know. I was kind of a little disappointed, put it together, and I didn't hear nothing, but you get to thinking about it here later, having time, it's very self-explanatory now.
Some things were quite important, and they had little to do with, you know, how expensive it was going to be. You needed a long wire antenna. This thing couldn't just set it on the radio, on the kitchen dinner table, and it would work. You had to run this wire outside, and also, and you well understand this, since we were pulling AM radio stations out of the air, it was best to do the listening at nighttime. Even though some stations, or I guess most stations, reduce power at night, there are some, they call them flamethrowers. They put out a lot of watts. And so no matter where you are, in what holler you are, we could pick up radio stations in that day. There were many more, as I say, many more AM stations than there are now. And it didn't matter what was being played or who was the narrator or who the guest speaker was. We didn't care. It was just a voice coming out of a cereal box. Oh, boy. Well, thank you for bringing up that memory. That goes back a long ways. Anyway, I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you, Andy. KK4JBQ.
That was the guy leaving this old silver tone, my great aunt over here. But there again, it's vacuum tube, 1940. You know, it's got amplification compared to the crystal set. So it's got a little something to drive it. It'll pick up some stuff. It's not like the new stuff, but it will pick up some stuff around. And well, when I heard you make a comment about the earphones or headphones, you know, I just got to thinking about I remember reading in that book, and they were long around before our time and before solid state and vacuum tubes was around the amplifier the way it would drive a speaker. In the beginning, that was pretty much the only way at the time. Yeah, I know about some of the 50,000 watts. I tune every now and then down in there. Like WSM, it's been on since 1925. When they play songs of Roy Acuff, Little Jimmy Dickens, Bill Monroe, Red Foley, Cowboy Copas. A lot of times when there's nobody on here late anymore, that's usually what I'm doing, listening to WSM.
Simpler times, but that's when we grew up, and that's what we were working with. Might as well own it, you know, if that is your experience, and be proud of it, and I mean that is to say, be thankful for it. You come by things honest today. I think, I don't know any real, young people. I don't know what's up with their lives. And I'm diminished, I suppose, because of that. I don't have that experience. But I'm sure I'd be surprised with what's going on. Started happening years and years ago. That children were active in so many things at school, and then extracurricular things after school. We weren't encouraged to do that. It wasn't available. First off, it wasn't available. Like Donna has a couple of godchildren who live in Cincinnati. And she goes to visit once in a while. And they are involved in so many things. They're very good students. But they're involved in gymnastics and swimming. And I mean, they compete. I suppose sanctioned by the school and on the school's team, perhaps. But that they take music lessons, and we didn't do anything like that. It just wasn't available. So you're going to grow up different if you start out with all of those advantages and all of that life experience. Their life is going to be maybe a bigger thing than mine was, but I have what I have, and it is what it is. And I'm just, at this stage in my life, I'm just chock full of memories. And that's how it's supposed to be. You spend a lifetime making memories, and I still have a brain good enough to be reminded of some things that really touched me over time. And those headphones really touched me. I put them on, and I was startled. I hadn't heard anything like that. I just had my own two ears, and I didn't have, what was behind, what was driving those headphones was very good equipment, playing probably I would just imagine that it was a reel-to-reel tape, a recording, very high-quality recording, and then it was sent out to this whole... Well, it was one side of the store. This store sold a lot of headphones. So you would just go in there and try them on. I would later, I think I did purchase a tape recorder from that store. I visited often. I felt a little out of place, but I visited often, and I picked up things. I kept my ears open, and I learned some things. That's how you learn. It would be a few years yet before we had the encyclopedia. I asked for that for my birthday once. surprise my parents. You want books? I don't understand. You want books? I said, yes, I'd like books, and it's bid for everybody. But just use my birthday as an excuse to buy a set of encyclopedias so that we can have that here. See, the school that I went to was a really poor country school, and all of our books, we did have a library, but all of our books were at least 30 years old and worn out. You know, I wanted some new books. They smell good, for one thing. Oh, well, anyhow, Andy, it's always good talking to you, and I'm just reminiscing now, and it's been a pleasure. I want to go off and prepare for a good night's rest, and I hope you can do the same. I know it's about a half hour before you take your medicine, and you get yourself a good night's rest, won't you? It's good to talk with you. KK4 JBQ. I'll be clear on your final.
LCI in the forest, we're talking about the vacuum tube, Ted. There ain't nobody around anymore. And the last people that I knew that even had tube tests are both dead now, W4KA and K4SUG. So anybody that needs to test tubes, I don't know what few, you know, things that requires it that's still in working order, what they would do now. Because there's no tube testers to be found now, but I just heard you talking about that, but that is a lot of times what I do. There's nobody on here late anymore like I used to be. I'll take and tune in to WSM, and I know from 1 a.m. Eastern time to 4 a.m., they play the best of the best, as they say, WSM classics. What built that station up to what it was from the beginning. I don't get to listen to that because I never get up during the daytime, but after they're done with the current opera, I'll listen to that program that Jeff Hoke has on there with plays. 40s, 50s, 60s, and the week that was, and let's see, on Monday he plays some of the rare songs that's really got into recognition in country music and like that. And then on Tuesday, he plays bluegrass music. So when there's nothing on here, that's generally where I'm at. KK4 JBQ, KI4 LZI.